Dr. Herbert L. Byerly of Andromeda on KDAL Television in Duluth, Town Country Show, November 15th.
You're always good for consciousness raising. At least you're good for me.
How about that?
And I thought that we might talk a little bit, first of all, about your visits to the Duluth area, because you come up every other Friday.
Right, right. I have the Chapel of the Open Door at Andromeda down at Long Lake. And every other Friday, I drive up here to the Duluth YWCA at 7 p.m. on Friday evening, every other Friday, and speak on the science of mind, the religious science philosophy. And I've been doing that now for quite some months. And we have a small group, but it's a very effective group. Deep discussions. We get into all sorts of beautiful things of consciousness, of ideas that people have, how to have better health, how to enjoy life more fully, how not to judge other people, how to live your life so that it's an example, the way Jesus taught us to do, you know, all these beautiful things. And the people go away wonderfully with a new attitude toward life and a new attitude toward living, which is important.
Definitely.
Because so many times, you know, we can have a negative point of view, and when we have a negative point of view, we're the only losers.
That's true. It tends to drag you down. I must admit, one of the nicest things about visiting with Dr. Byerly and listening to him on Friday nights is the small group. The
yes.
discussions are valuable. It gives everyone a chance to throw out ideas that so often in a larger congregational setting, well, you just do not have the chance or opportunity to discuss, and everyone can throw in their little 2 cents
right,
or bits
right,
and pieces.
Right.
I had some things that I thought I would like to ask you, and you can easily relate them to the science of the mind. In reading lately, there was an article in Time magazine just last night talking about divorced Catholics and the problems that they have
had. You want me to put my foot in my mouth, huh?
Of course.
Okay.
And the fact that, of course, at this point, the philosophy in the Catholic Church is what God hath put together, let no man put asunder. And this is the reason why when two Catholics marry, it is considered in an insoluble relationship, even though perhaps the people don't get along and they do separate.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then with remarriage? How should one look at this particular quote? I wondered where it...
You mean the quote that they are using, that all wedding ceremony, many wedding ceremonies use? I had a beautiful wedding just a week ago out at Andromeda, and this young couple permitted me to say, I now pronounce you man and wife. But their ceremony was the most beautiful thing. They were married in heaven before they came to the church. And then they came to me and they said, Dr. Byerly, will you do the ceremony for us? I said, I'd be delighted. What would you like? And they had read these new marriages and so forth, and they had their ceremony all written up. And then they allowed me to say, I pronounce you man and wife, after they said their vows to each other, after they claimed their love for each other, after they said to each other that they were meant for each other, and that they planned to give each other the highest that was within them. And I thought, man, that's what weddings are all about. That's what marriage is all about. That's what life is about. It's the giving of oneself to another, the sharing, and yet letting each one grow and unfold their nature to the highest of the God nature within them. But relative to this, what God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. I would imagine the real meaning is that what God hath joined together, no man can put asunder. If the marriage is made in heaven, it'll be an eternal marriage. No matter how rough the road may be that the two walk along, experiencing growing experiences in life, a lot of children, a lot of need for finances, health problems, all these things, they stick together and they want to have a beautiful, full life. But if any marriage is truly not made in heaven, if the two souls are not merged by a unity of love, which is the indwelling presence of God, no marriage can be retained. When people stay together who are fighting like cats and dogs, who are unhappy with each other, who have lived a beautiful life together to the degree they could, and then they have come to a point where they no longer can find beauty in one another. They no longer can find the presence of God in one another. And all they do is bicker and fight and rip each other apart. Well, that's not a marriage of heaven. They have lowered themselves to the lowest level. So when they separate, I found so many people who've separated have become the best of friends again, because they no longer felt the responsibility to make the other person better, to help them mold their life into that perfect pattern that they envision for a perfect husband or a perfect wife.
Well, I have wondered too that, as you were saying, a perfect union how could we, if you'll excuse me, how could any minister or priest possibly decide what the perfect union would be, because God would be the only one responsible for knowing, so we would be sitting in judgment here on them.
Well, no minister, priest, or justice of peace, or whomever, can ever decide when a true marriage is made. The true marriage is made by the individuals, and they merely come to sanctify it by the church experience of tradition, or by the law of the social action of the community in which they are living, whatever it requires. And that is, the church merely sanctifies a marriage. It does not make the marriage. The marriage is made by the individuals, and it is made really within the heart of a kind and loving Father. You know, Jesus said, "Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you." And if the marriage is a joint effort of love, we're doing unto others. If the marriage is an effort to make the person, the other person, change to our expression, our need for to have them be something, well, this isn't right. That's not doing unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Because you don't want the other person to change you to their way, because you think they should be changed to your way.
Well, within this context, I know that our Dr. Hunter from Range Mental Health has often said, we do not educate our children for marriage. We really don't give them the proper outlook for choosing a partner, the right informational input so that they can choose. Why is it then that so often, and statistically it's been proven, second marriages do work? What is it that we do or that people do when they, if they choose the first mate and it just does not turn out to be the right thing?
Let's say they're a little more mature.
Do they just learn to tune into themselves better after the experience of wedding?
I have a young couple that have just come in for counseling prior to marriage, and they said to me, "Dr. Barley, what does Andromeda teach?" And I said, "Well, Andromeda doesn't teach anything. It's a non-denominational church. The minister that is there currently teaches the philosophy that he knows, and that's why I teach religious science." And the girl said that she was a practicing Catholic and a very devout Catholic, but that she was divorced. And the fellow said he was a very good Episcopalian, practicing Episcopalian, but he's divorced. And the church no longer had a place for them if they were going to get married together. And even with the divorce, it wasn't too easy. So they said, "What does Andromeda teach? Or what do I teach?" And so I pointed out, sort of in a nutshell, I don't spend a lot of time on the birth of Jesus, that he was born in the Immaculate Conception, which is all really neat and true. I mean, I'm not denying that. But Jesus didn't say, "Hey, look at my birth, wasn't that neat?" And I'm not pointing out his crucifixion. He died on the cross, big deal, you know. He said, "The last enemy I'll overcome is death." It's not the death that you should be worshiping, me up on that cross, no way. I am the risen Christ. I'm that beautiful spirit of all holiness that's within every man. And then he said, "But pay attention to the 3 years that I stood among you and taught you and gave you wonderful thoughts to live by. I gave you a philosophy of life that if you follow it, your whole world will become beautiful and full. Whatsoever ye ask of the Father believing, it's yours." And he said these things, and this is what I told to this young lady and this young man. I said, "This is my philosophy, the teachings of Jesus." And Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, Mohammedism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Lao Tse, all the great teachers of all time taught universal truths. And you know, Jesus taught the same thing. You can look at any one of them and say, "Hey, yes, here's where Jesus gave us that teaching." And it made a real truth of it. It made a real picture. It made something fantastic, because Jesus said this too. And we call ourselves Christians. So let's start living according to what Jesus taught. And the young lady turned to the young fellow. They're both in their 30s, just kids yet. And they said, she said, "Dear, I like that." And he says, "So do I." She says, "If we went to this church, would you go to church too?" And he says, "I sure would." And they said, "Well, let's join."
Yes,
well,
great.
This is beautiful, because it is two hearts meeting together, doing things together, and enjoying things together. I tell you, it's fantastic. It's just beautiful. And you get into life and enjoy the real meaning of the teachings of Jesus. That's what Christianity is all about.
In the last 60 seconds, how about the problem that you arrive at then when a new minister comes to your church and perhaps doesn't quite hit you the same way your old minister did? Should you stick What do you think? Are you tied to the edifice, the building, or do you go minister hunting?
Well, Jesus said one thing. He said that our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit. This is our place of worship. This is our church. And within this body, we worship. Now, when we go to a church, the minister can merely unfold his understanding of truth, his understanding of life and love, and his understanding of the teachings of all the Bible. And that's all that he can do. Nothing else can be done. And so when he does this, then we learn and grow. So we should go where we can find the unfoldment of the Christ within ourselves, whatever church it may be.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Byerly, and I hope that we can invite you back again.
Love to.
Good. Thank you.
Money, come on, sir, from 10 million.